What's the deal with bailiffs? If you're not in court, who needs them? This is Sancho the Bailiff.
What's your favorite Seinfeld episode?
Do you have one?
I think the Chinese restaurant one is pretty great.
I love the Chinese restaurant one.
I also love the one where they're reopening that historic movie theater.
Yes.
And there's that hot dog and Lloyd Braun and Kramer eats the hot dog that's been there for like 100 years. That's pretty great.
Yes. I like the one where they go, it's early. It's the one where they go visit the Jerry's parents in Miami. I think it might be like the first or second season.
Boca Vista?
Yes. And Elaine comes and they won't turn on the air. And then she gets like high off like pills or something because she has back pain.
That's right.
And they go to that event and there's all the feuding. I love that one.
Is that the one with the astronaut pen that writes upside down?
Yes, yes.
It's like, take the pen.
Yeah.
I don't want the pen.
Yeah, yeah. It's I love that one. I love the one where George eats an eclair out of the trash.
Oh, and then the the girlfriend's mom like sees him do it.
I love the big salad.
The big salad. It's That's so one of the good. Best ones. I used to have the script for that episode.
It's so good.
It's
and
really
honestly,
good.
The soup Nazi one is so good.
Like, and especially like living in LA, like we can relate to the soup Nazi, like quirky little like eateries. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Seen and Heard.
Hey.
This is the podcast all about the Sight and Sound Top 100 Greatest Films of All Time
list. That's all it's about. That's it.
I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we are ping-ponging on the Sight and Sound list. We're in the middle here, the 2012 list.
Can I just say, I want to point out, this movie, Sancho the Bailiff, is number 59 on the 2012 list, which is what we're working off of. But that's the bottom. Wait, is that a fantastic fact or not? Am I tripping?
What do you mean that's the bottom?
That's the bottom of the list. We're at the bottom of the list, but it's number 59.
What?
I'm trying to make a point and it's not working.
Wait, what do you mean bottom?
We're at the bottom of the list.
I mean, we're kind of in the middle.
We go from the top and the bottom.
Oh, technically, I see what you're saying. If it's two tennis players, then we're on the bottom players.
And it's 59, which is a high number.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of ties too.
This one, there's a bunch in 59.
What number is this on the 2022 list?
Number 75.
Oh, so it dropped a little bit. Not too much, but a little bit. Okay.
No.
Yes, this is Sancho Dayu or Sancho the Bailiff.
But also I want to point out, because there's a bunch of stuff tied for 75 or like in the area where this is now is like where La Ventura is now. So it's think about that.
Okay, interesting.
There was something else. It was all movies we've done. Imitation of Life, I believe, also.
But so that moved up.
Climbed, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's not even my favorite.
I know.
I have so many Cirque movies are better than that.
I know.
Hey, Jackie.
Hey.
Before we get into Sancho the Bailiff, what have you been watching this last week?
I've been so bad. I've been very, very bad. I haven't seen anything except, and I'm pulling a Greg here. I'm pulling Greg here because it's a movie I haven't seen in 10 years. And it's Brokeback Mountain.
Oh,
I haven't seen it in so long.
It's been a long time for me, too.
Probably 10 years. What a great movie. I mean, what can I say?
It is.
It's so good. Very beautiful and sad. It's really sad. I forgot about the shirts.
The shirts.
Like, I remember the scene of him hugging the shirt in the closet, but I didn't realize that it was like the bloodied shirt and his shirt inside of it.
That's right.
It's really sad. And then I've been rewatching Sex and the City, which has been taking up more time than I like to admit.
You think it holds up?
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
are you a Trey fan?
The first, no.
What about Mr. Big?
No, he's trash. Only Steve.
Which Steve's one is the Steve? Best one. The one with the weird, husband. The weird accent, the New York accent.
Yeah, where he's Miranda.
Nice.
There's a girl on Instagram or TikTok or something that just impersonates Steve. Like, she dresses up like him and she goes to like farmers markets in New York and just walking around New York City and she's like, Miranda. It's so good.
That guy was on the new series I saw because Molly was watching it.
He is in the new one.
Yeah.
Oh, the new one's bad.
It's terrible. It's, what's it called?
Why did they do it?
Just Like That. Just Like This.
And Just Like That.
Just Like That.
So I don't know. Season one, Sex and the City is really kind of janky, but in a good way. Like, I like it. Like, there's all these bad cuts, and like people, they break the fourth wall a lot, which they don't do in subsequent seasons.
Well, that's a stylistic choice, though.
I know, but it's like, it's kind of jank the first season, but I still like it.
Was the first season like 97 or 98?
99, I believe.
99?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because 99 was Sopranos started, and I feel like that's when HBO really kicked it up with Sopranos.
Probably.
Because, like, have you seen Oz at all?
No.
That was like 97, 98 HBO, and it feels pretty dated. But then Sopranos like kind of raised the bar in a big way. Mm. You seen Sopranos? Oh, I think you would like it.
I know.
It's really funny, too.
It's just so long.
It's not that long.
I don't like TV because I don't like that. I don't
yeah,
like
but that's like the best of the best.
I know. It is the best of the best, right?
And like each season gets better and better and better.
That's
like it starts strong and then just gets successively better.
I mean. Like, I shouldn't be watching Sex and the City. I should be watching other stuff.
Watch Sopranos. Watch Twin Peaks.
I know. It's just so much.
I desperately want to do Fire Walk With Me as a personal print, but I can't if you haven't seen the series.
I can't. I forbid it.
I know. I literally can't. So it's a checkmate there. Also, not that much.
I know, it's been weird.
I saw the first Omen, the new, you know, the horror movie that's out, because I heard it was really scary. It's not. It's fine. It's coming from a stylistic angle, like it's well done and the movie has this like nice momentum and stuff, but the script just feels like very generic and by the numbers. So that was a little disappointing. I rewatched Boyhood. I hadn't seen it basically since it came out.
Wait, you rewatched it? I thought another one of my friends rewatched it. Oh, maybe I both did. Of you guys.
Yeah.
I want to rewatch it so
Oh, it holds
bad.
Up.
Oh my God.
One or two missteps in there, but other than that, it's pretty perfect.
I really want to.
And then, yeah, just continued my Hammer horror series.
That's so, a lot. You watched a lot then.
No, like three or four movies. Anyway.
Better than one.
Should we do it?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get into the film this week from 1954. This is Kenji Mizoguchi's Sancho the Bailiff.
Sancho the Bailiff, or Sancho Dayu, was released in 1954. It was directed by Kenji Mizoguchi, written by Fuji Yahiro and Yoshikata Yoda, based on the short story by Ogai Mori. Cinematography by Kazuo Miyagawa. Music by Fumio Hayasaka, Kinshichi Kodera, and Tamekichi Mochizuki. In medieval Japan, a kind and just governor is exiled from his province by the feudal lord for disobedience. He sends his family away, but not before having a pep talk with his son, Zushio, in which he tells him that mercy is the most important of all ideals to strive for, and without it, men are beasts. He gives Zushio an idol of the goddess of mercy before they say goodbye. 7 years later, Zushio, his mother Tamaki, and his sister Anju travel to reunite with the governor. On the road, a priestess offers them shelter and arranges for a boat to make their journey shorter. The kind gesture turns out to be a trap, and the family is sold into slavery. The children are sent to work at the manor of Sancho, a bailiff for the Minister of the Right, and Tamaki is sent to the island of Sado to become a courtesan. Sancho is a cruel master. His slaves are treated wretchedly and are punished harshly if they try to escape. His son Taro is kind, and the children confide in him about who they are. He encourages them to bear the work and escape when they are older, before running away to become a monk. 10 years later, Zushio is a hardened foreman who disciplines slaves himself. When a slave from Sado arrives, she sings a song that laments two lost children whose names are Zushio and Anju. Anju realizes where their mother is and that she's still alive. She tries to convince Zushio that they should run away and find their mother, but he refuses. When one of her friends, a fellow slave, is sick, Anju is granted permission to go with Zushio to leave her in the mountains to die. While away from the guards, Zushio has a change of heart, and Anju says she will stay behind and distract the guards so he can run away. He promises to come back for her. Anju, rather than be tortured for information, drowns herself. Zushio takes refuge in Taro's monastery, and Taro gives him a letter to take to the emperor's advisor in Kyoto to appeal his case. After initially rejecting him, the advisor realizes Zushio's lineage is accurate when he sees the idol of the goddess of mercy. The advisor informs him that his father has died, but grants Zushio his father's former governorship. Zushio outlaws all slavery in his province. He has Sancho arrested, and he liberates the estate. There, he is informed of Anju's suicide. Zushio gives up his title and goes to Sado to find his mother. He finds her, half delirious and singing the same song from so many years ago. As they embrace, he admits his shame of coming to her as he did when he could have come as a governor. But she assures him that she is proud that he has embraced his father's wisdom. The film stars Kinuyo Tanaka as Tamaki, Yoshiaki Hanayagi as Zushio, and Kyoko Kagawa as Anju. You might remember her from Tokyo Story. She plays the daughter, whose name is Kyoko in that, who's the school teacher.
Right, right. That's right.
Did you recognize her? I didn't.
I did, yeah. I knew her from somewhere, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah, her hair is so different.
Yeah, she had a mohawk in Tokyo Story, right?
The short story the film is based on was written in 1915, but the plot is taken from a Japanese folktale. The first written record of the story dates back to the 1600s. You know, I couldn't really find a lot of production history on this one, but I will mention there's two vital differences between the short story and the screenplay. In the short story, Anju is older than Zushio. And Zushio never really has his low point. Like, he doesn't become...
Branding?
Yeah, he doesn't become a disheartened, like, tough foreman guy.
Hmm.
Because he's just the little brother the whole time.
Oh, okay.
So
that was a movie thing.
Yeah, that redemption aspect is right. A movie thing, which honestly works so
yeah, oh, yeah, for like, sure.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
Also different is that the song only makes an appearance at the end when Zushio finds his mother. That's how he recognizes her. That's how he realizes this woman is his mother, because she's singing a song about these two children that have his and his sister's name.
Right.
Right? So in the movie, they use it as a major plot device, really.
Well, they set it up.
They set it up, yeah.
Because I feel like in a film, if you just heard it at the end, it would be too convenient.
Sure.
So it's like, you got to set it up
but
a little bit.
But it works so well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ugh. This was Mitsuguchi's 81st film. He. Why are you laughing?
Wait, 81st?
81st film.
Oh my God.
He made 86 films between 1923 and 1956.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
No.
81.
Yeah, he died in 1956. He was only 58. So that makes him and Ozu. Ozu also died very young, around the same time, maybe a couple years after him. I think he Aww. Died in the mid to late, or early to mid 60s, Ozu. But yeah. Wow. Mm. 86 in that time, huh?
Isn't that nuts?
Wow. Well, it certainly feels like the film of a filmmaker who has made 81 films prior to it.
Of course. So he was on an amazing run when he made this film. For 3 years in a row, he would be awarded at the Venice Film Festival, starting in 1952 for The Life of Oharu, which won the International Award. 1953, Ugetsu won the Passanetti Award. And 1954, Sancho the Bailiff won the Silver Lion. So for 3 years, he went to Venice and won
wow.
something.
Must feel great. And of I all know. Film festivals, too.
Yeah.
The most beautiful.
I know.
I don't know. Well, maybe some people say Cannes is more beautiful.
I think Cannes is more... I don't know.
You get the beachside resort thing.
Is it about beauty or is it about prestige? Cannes is the number one.
No, it's like, what location do you want to visit the most? And that's the coolest film festival.
I guess.
I don't know.
There's an anime version of the folktale, which was released in 1961. It's called Anju and... Zushiomaru, and it also includes talking animals.
Oh, cool.
It's on YouTube, so I like watched a few scenes. The boat scene, the scene where they're being taken, is like Very similar.
Are they animals or?
No, they're just talking animals like sidekicks.
Oh, okay.
But yes, in that one, Zushio is the younger sibling. Huh.
Interesting.
It also makes, we'll talk about this later. I think it also makes a little more sense with the whole like, you go ahead, I'm going to stay here. It makes a little more sense if he's younger, you know?
Right.
But we'll
right.
talk.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Cool.
Initial thoughts?
Yeah, so I had seen this once before. I had seen this about 10 years ago.
What was going on 10 years ago?
It was
Were you just sitting in front of your TV all day long and just watching things?
Yeah, like 10 years ago, I had just moved to LA and I don't know, was working sporadically. So I had a lot of time to just plow through movies.
That's great.
And I was at that perfect age. I was like early to mid 20s where I was just like hungry to see everything. Nice. I mean, I still am hungry, but like, all the art house staples, right? All the Criterion stuff. At this time, it was Filmstruck? Or no, this was, I saw this on like Hulu. Remember when Criterion used to be on Hulu?
No, that's before my time.
They used to be on Hulu, and then Filmstruck happened, and then Criterion Channel.
Wow.
So I saw this when I was on Hulu about 10 years ago, and I don't remember why I watched it. It was my first Mizoguchi. And still to this day, I actually have only seen like 3 Mizoguchi films. And this is
the ones that I just named?
Yeah, and this is by far my favorite. So I saw this 10 years ago and it blew me away. I don't remember why I clicked on it. I don't think anyone had recommended it to me, but I think I just knew it was esteemed and it blew me away. And so I hadn't seen it for 10 years and watching it to prep for this episode, I was like, I wonder if this is still going to blow me away. And it did. I think it's incredible masterwork of a film. Like it is the pureness of a folktale that's been passed on for generations, mm-hmm. right? It has that the story is simple. It's pure. It's distilled down.
It's so simple.
It's drama at its like most basic. Mm-hmm. And I think the poeticism that Mizoguchi implores here is so effortless. And I didn't know he'd made 81 films before this, but that totally checks out because it just feels like a masterful hand mm-hmm. is behind the camera.
That's exactly how I feel.
And so the way he's able to make this timeless kind of story that you can't help but get wrapped up in. I mean, who can't? Because it's like you have a story like this where people are sold into slavery and families are broken apart and people are beaten down. And it's like, how are you not just automatically invested in that, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, and it has this great fable-like quality. Mm-hmm. There's this great kind of almost ghost story. Even though the mom is still alive, her ghost kind of hangs totally. Over a lot of the film. Even that scene when they're, what's the old woman who they put out to die?
Yeah, that's so Namiji. Sad. Yeah,
and they're about to leave her there, and then they think they hear the mother yeah. singing. So it's
and
like
that's what makes Zushio change his mind.
Yeah, exactly. That is the tipping point for him. But yeah, so I love that it kind of feels like a ghost story. But he's definitely like Ugetsu and stuff. Like he has that in him. But yeah, the way it's able to feel very matter of fact, like almost in an Italian neorealist style for some of it, like the day-to-day life of being a slave on this guy's estate and sort of the trials and tribulations of that. But then you have this poetic thing and like any poetic film, it can only end on this bittersweet note. Like, yes, he's found his mom and they're together now, but at what cost? And what's happened over the years, and they're just deeply changed people, and half the family is dead at this point. So yeah, I think this month has been crazy because of Ping Pong. It's just been masterpiece after masterpiece.
Really,
and I think this is another masterpiece that we've covered this month. So I think it's an incredible movie.
Masterpiece classics.
Yeah, exactly. How about you?
This is my first Mizoguchi film that I've ever seen. And from what I can gather, it's a good one to start with, apparently, because it embodies a lot of the themes that he liked to explore and his camera work. Here's the thing. It's exactly what you were saying. It's like it's a straightforward story and plot. And we've been doing it reminds me of Wild Strawberries, those kinds of like 50s. Very black and white, very like straightforward story, but it's done by a master, and so it's like it has embellishment, you know, and it has like amazing camera work, and it's super effective. So like that's how I feel like they're kind of related, honestly. And it's just, it's a really devastating movie, and I think it's the emotional journey in this is like so gripping, and I like the sadness of it all. And like, this is a tragedy, right? But it doesn't really feel tragic. It feels more sad to me. And there's a difference, because it's not like trauma porn and it's not like pain porn.
It seems like it's heading that way, right?
Exactly. And you don't see anyone die. They just say like, oh, your father's died. The scene with Anju is like very beautiful and like a very peaceful death. And so like, it's more just has this deep sadness that I like more than tragedy, which is why I like it so much. And yeah, it's a movie that's always going to be relevant. And like my hope, and I think the hope for anyone who believes in world peace, is that it won't be. But hey, like, we're 1,000 years after the movie, after the story takes place, we're 1,000 years after, and we're now like 70 years after the movie was made. And it's still really relevant. Yeah. So.
Well, there's the title in the beginning of the movie that's like, this takes place during Japan's dark ages and before humanity, I'm paraphrasing, here's found its way. Oh, yeah. What's the line?
And mankind has yet to awaken as human beings.
I saw that. I'm like, we still have not.
Like, look, we're around. Here.
Yeah.
Doesn't that suck?
It's depressing.
Like, the other day, I literally just had a thought. I'm like, we're too old to still be having wars. Like, we're just too old. Like,
it's why the, yeah, not like, to go into a whole thing, but
shouldn't we have outgrown this by now?
That's why the human race is not going to last.
Yeah.
Because we're dumb as fuck.
Yeah. Or maybe just the people in power need to like be mature. And it's like, no, it's never going to happen. You shouldn't do that.
Because we're a species that thrives on gaining power and maintaining it at whatever cost.
We just got really deep.
And throwing our dicks around when we have power and squashing other people.
But listen, like, yeah, we got deep, but this is like, it's happening. And like the other day, World War III was trending on Twitter. And yeah. I was like, well, shit.
I know. We're about overdue. I mean, what's it been, like 80 years since the last World War or something like that?
Yeah.
It's bleak to think about, but dear God. I mean, I don't want to get into a whole thing here, but I think capitalism has really ruined our country, too. So
definitely.
It's bleak out there. It's bleak.
It is bleak.
Back on the film, I think it's funny. You know, one reason it surprises me why I watched this 10 years ago, only because the movie's called Sancho the Bailiff, which sounds like a boring as fuck movie.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm like, what is this?
That's
a court
my
case?
Log line. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see a court film. But
how exciting could a movie about a bailiff be? Bailiffs just stand there and are the cops in courtrooms.
Yeah, what technically in a courtroom? I'm trying to remember.
So like a bailiff is a representative for the law, essentially.
Okay.
Like that's like the official title. But really in today's day and age, they just stand there and look tough in court.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And in this movie, he is like the hand of the
right, the minister of the right or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
Yeah, so let's just talk about that opening and the humanity. I guess like the humanity, the opening line, right? That says about mankind awakening as human beings and the humanity of this movie. Like, medieval times were hard AF.
No, and it's
like,
not. You just go down to Buena Park and you pay the 50 bucks or whatever.
Oh my God, I love... For how dark medieval times actually was, medieval times in Buena Park has no right to be that fun.
I know.
I love it there so much.
I'm pretty sure we've brought up medieval times at least 3 times on
they
the show
just
before.
Hire us at this point. If you're looking for quality entertainment and you're in Los Angeles, go to medieval times.
Honestly, as someone who put it off for far too long because I thought it was like just for kids or it was like super
not
cheesy. No, as an adult, just go. You're going to have
really
the time
fun.
Of your life.
Literally. Yeah, and it sets it up immediately with that line, right, about human beings. And then you have immediately, like, the dad as the foil of what, like, we just learned. And you know that it's, like, hard times. But you know this dad is here, and it's, like, so immediate, which works so good. And, yeah, when he says, like, without... Okay, so, like, the actual line itself that he says, the proverb, right, that is the anchor of this entire movie is, without mercy, man is like a beast. Even if you are hard on yourself, be merciful to others. Men are created equal. Everyone is entitled to their happiness. Put that in like the year 1000, the lens of that. Like, that's pretty crazy.
It's pretty progressive.
Yeah, it's like so progressive.
Because people still don't know that now.
Exactly.
People don't know about being empathetic.
Very progressive words for such a horrible time. Like the fact that anyone can just kidnap and sell. Like, you can just walk down the street and get kidnapped and sold. It's really bad.
That's the Middle Ages for you.
No, I know. But then you have Taro, right? The son of Sancho. And Sancho sucks. Like, the first thing we hear Sancho say is like, give them no mercy. And it's like, okay, I get what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because of the dad.
Yeah. Yes.
But then you have Taro, who's the son. And I love when the governor or whoever it is comes and tells him like, oh, you should be grateful for such a father. And it's just that like really heartbreaking shot of Taro who has to bow because it's like custom.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And you can just see on his face like, fuck you all.
Why does Taro never come back for the kids, though?
So this is what I like. What I like about this movie is that it's realistic, like in that sense. It's like there's these good people, right? They set them up, but they know they can't compete with the man. And right, Taro's right. like that. And the same thing with the advisor who is being the nicest guy in the world, right? To Zushio when he comes to him after he's been a dick. And then he's like nice to him because he realizes he's not lying.
Right.
And then Zushio says like, I'm going to free the slaves. And he's like, what'd you just say? Like, so it's like this movie bursts bubbles,
right?
Which is what I like about it.
Yeah,
it's sad. I think it's actually a very like hopeless movie in a sad way. Like,
well, I think from the very beginning it's hopeful because he thinks that mankind has come into its own when clearly it's not been the case.
Oh, Mizoguchi, but yeah. He had just come off of World War II.
That's
so
true.
It's like,
sure.
19, I don't know. Yeah. Does he think that?
Well, I don't, yeah, that's a good question.
Know. And then, of course, Zushio, he gives up his, well, first of all, there's Taro. Okay, the line that I was talking about is when Taro says that humans have little sympathy for things that don't directly concern them.
Right.
And like, what a line. Like, that is so true. And it's mm-hmm. so, like, today, it's literally so relevant. But it's these guys who are jaded, right? Like Taro says that after the fact that he's like escaped and become a monk.
Right.
He still writes him the letter, but he's like, don't get your hopes up, kid.
Right.
And then Zushio gives up his post after he like has freed the slaves. He gives up because he's like, I'm not cut out for this.
Yeah,
like,
he didn't want
and
it.
I can't
yeah.
really do make a lot of change besides this, if this even sticks, which is it gonna?
Well, he probably would have been fired anyway if he didn't resign. Because
right.
What he did was a very radical move. And he took it. It's like when he first posits, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to abolish slavery. And they're like, you can't do that.
But then he does it.
Then he does it.
So it's like
he would have gotten.
It's probably going to be repealed, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm probably, but so in that moment, he let all the slaves loose from Sancho's estate,
sure.
So they're all free.
Sure,
but yeah, lots of others who aren't.
Don't you think the movie is a little bit giving us a feeling of hopelessness in the face of the man, in the face of like bigger government corruption? I don't know.
It's interesting. I think yes, to an extent. But also this movie does have a bittersweet ending, like the fact that he does find his mom. I think if it was completely hopeless, he would escape, and you know, obviously goes back, his sister's dead, he finds out his dad died, and then he thinks, he's led to believe that his mom is dead. They
right.
tell him she died in the tsunami a few years
they
ago.
They say it so casually, it's such a casual line that's thrown out.
Yeah, and you see the guy down there at the beach cleaning up and stuff, and then there's magically the mom. So after you've already gotten the audience's expectations down to like the mom's dead, mm-hmm. then you're like, oh, never mind. It's like a little sweet light at the end
it
of
is.
The tunnel.
It is.
So that's why I don't think it's completely hopeless.
But she's also
at least,
like blind and like blind. Delirious.
Isn't she supposed to be in her? I think she's like late 40s here.
Poor woman.
That's what she's supposed to be. But just the life of.
And they cut her tendon, which is like, how do you even do that?
Also, did they think before they cut her tendon? Because now someone has to carry her ass around. Yeah.
But I guess if she's just in the brothel, she doesn't have to move around that much.
Yeah, she just lays there. I don't know.
So,
that's bleak.
But like, so I think it is, it's, you're right. That is a very nice kind of like light at the end of the tunnel. But I think in a way it's sending a message about like, when the world gets you down, just go back to your small world.
Like,
right. Like, yeah, you can't change the world. Might as well enjoy your family.
Right. Yeah.
Might as well enjoy your personal life.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, I see it kind of dark.
Maybe this movie just reminded me of maybe Brazil. A little bit.
Definitely.
But that has a bleaker ending than
oh,
this. But
bleak.
Like, no, I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, no, absolutely. It's like the world will eat you up and chew you up and spit you out and all that stuff. I think that's all there. But it doesn't feel like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I think the first time I saw it, I was expecting, like you said, for it to be like just really hard to watch.
Yes. Trauma porn.
For a movie about, yeah, trauma porn, for people who are sold into slavery.
Right.
But the fact that it...
just, we don't see them actually get branded. Like, we don't see the act.
And you don't
we
see don't them see cut, her tendons. Cut her tendon. Yeah. It all happens off screen. You see people reacting, which is the classic thing.
Yeah, they just tell him, like, your father died. We don't see, like, an old man alone and an exile die.
How do they say he died again?
I don't know.
Like, the wind picked up or something? I don't know. He was standing on a cliff and...
I don't know. And then what else? Yeah, we don't really see anyone... Even the old woman is saved. She doesn't die on the hill. I thought, because they go, oh, she goes, please don't leave her to the wild birds. Birds. And then it cuts to a scene where they're in the forest and you hear, caw, caw. And I'm like, oh, fuck no.
There's going to be like, a scene where they like ravage like, her.
Yeah, we yeah. don't see that.
The fact that he goes back for her. Wait, the woman is Namiji. Yeah.
Namiji.
He goes back for Namiji. So, he's like... That's a bold, brave move.
That's a bold, brave move. But also, in what world would they not get caught together, but him carrying a dying woman is yeah. somehow safer?
Honestly,
that's my question.
I hate... Maybe I'm a terrible person. I would have left her. I would have left her. Because my sister...
makes no sense. You're making this sacrifice. Why are yeah. you telling him to take Namiji, who's clearly about to expire?
Well, when she gets the medicine from
yeah,
the monk...
Yeah, of course she survives.
She's, like, feeling better.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's the thing. It's like your sister is putting her life on the line. Right. And like, I'm not going to waste any time. And surely picking
up. Or carry a dying woman.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
all they know, she's dying. What was the point of that?
That'd probably slow that him. It would slow him down by about 50%.
I thought
that. So you would have left her.
Oh, yeah, I think so. But you know what? I think it goes back to the father's words about like, be hard on yourself and merciful to others. Maybe that's why he did it. Maybe that's right. why Anju said, like, can you please go back for her? That's why Anju sacrifices herself, really, I think. It's yeah. like, screw me, I'm going to
yeah,
help
she's
you.
A martyr.
She's a martyr, yeah.
I think I love the beautiful, her last moments.
Oh my God, that's otherworldly.
The fact, too, I think the woman that's keeping her there does turn pretty quickly, where she's like, where do you think you're going? And where's your brother? And like, then she's like, okay, just go. Like, tie me up and go. But... I love beautiful. that she escapes just to then walk into the lake that's right there.
It's, yeah.
It's like, because she just wants to die on her own terms and she doesn't want to die in the confines of Sancho's estate.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, the theme in this movie is like, you know, optimistic in a way, because all the people that die in this movie, if they just held out a little longer, like if she had held out, he would have been back for her and saved her.
Sad, I know.
But it's like these people who have given up, who are like, I'd rather die. And in all fairness, she probably would have been tortured into
That's what I'm... I think
oblivion.
She was scared that she was going to eventually give him away with right. the amount of torture.
Yeah. And been so much torture that she'd probably be disfigured. And
yeah. But it's so beautiful. Like that sequence is... The swinging gate after
oh,
she
the swinging
leaves.
Gate.
Ugh.
And then the old woman
and
goes
the
out
old
and watches
woman, it's
her.
It's perfect. Yeah. So
she
it's
falls
like,
to her knees.
It's the swinging gate. Yeah. It cuts to the... friend at on her knees, and then it cuts back to the lake with the water and it's rippling and you know she's right under there. It's really...
Don't you hear the song over it too? Is
I
the song
so,
playing?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's yeah.
It's ghostly.
Yeah. I literally when it happened I was like ah.
Also imagine just walking into a lake to kill yourself. Like
she
I know
must not
people
know
have done
swim,
it.
Swim, right?
I guess so.
And it's so great because the friend points them to the other gate, right? And it shows them, it's one long shot, them leaving the other gate. And then you return to the gate that we just saw the swinging door. And it's quiet and there's no one there. And
yeah.
it's beautiful. This movie, I mean, like, let's talk about just the smoothness of the... Both like the from a narrative perspective and just like a camera perspective. Like just the way that everything is so fluid
yeah, aesthetically.
And smooth. The way the scenes just melt into each other, it immediately grabbed my attention. Like when the movie starts, you have two storylines, right? It's when the governor is being exiled and also the journey that they're taking 7 years later to return to him. And it's a, there's a match cut of young Zushio and 7 years later, Zushio, he's running, and then he's little. But I didn't know that was the same kid. Like, I couldn't process it until, like, things started happening, and I was like, oh, like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then there's another, like, match cut of Tamaki, the mom. She's sitting, like, in the room as her husband is being, like, exiled. And then it cuts to her by the lake, sitting in the same position. It's really beautiful. Again, the dad hands the statue of the goddess to Zushio, and then it cuts to, like, Zushio 7 years later with the thing around his neck, like the statue.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it melted. That whole sequence just melts into each other.
Just like last week's movie, too, La Dolce Vita. We talked about how each scene kind of melts.
Yeah.
So interesting. Maybe this is reductive, but Mizoguchi is one of the three, sort of generally considered the three Japanese masters, right?
Yeah.
I was about to say Miyazaki.
I mean,
it's Kurosawa, Ozu, Mizoguchi.
Yeah.
Ozu is the super, super, like, his sensibility is very Japanese. His movies are slow. You have the tatami shots. It's very observed. There's long takes. On the other side, you have Kurosawa, who was criticized sometimes by Japanese people as being too Western.
Yeah, right.
Of, like, catering to Western audiences, and his films are fast and furious.
Sure. Fast and furious. They're too big, fast, too furious. Yeah,
they're fast very and furious. Big and epic, and full of action. Not necessarily. I mean, some of them physical action, but just in movement in the frame
cuts.
And stuff.
I mean, he edited his own movies like as he was making them.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I feel like Mizoguchi is somewhere in the middle. I feel like he pulls together the best of both things. Where, like,
definitely.
This film has the movement of a Kurosawa or something, but it feels observed. And again, not that a Kurosawa film could not feel observed, because plenty of his films, I think about, you know, we did Rashomon, and I think about a lot of sequences in that are very observed and patient. But I do think that this, from what I've seen of Mizoguchi, I do think he does a great job at kind of, like, that middle ground of, like, there's some really painterly totally beautiful stuff in here, and he'll linger on stuff for just, like, a little too long, which is, like, the perfect amount of time. You always want a little too long, right?
Yeah.
The gate swinging, that really stuck out to me. That was almost my favorite sight. My favorite sight was almost the old woman collapsing on her knees and, like, praying as Anju walked into the lake. That was, like, almost... Ugh. Just a stunning sequence. But yeah, I mean, aesthetically, the way it's paced, because I'm really sensitive to pacing in films. I'm really sensitive. We were just talking about Christopher Nolan off mic. And the reason I'm hot and cold on him is because sometimes I think I really like about half of his films, but the other half, I feel like I'm getting jerked around by the editing, because a film needs to, like, be organic.
Sure.
And I'm really sensitive to pacing, and I think something like this is so effortless. Like, it's perfect. Every scene lasts exactly how long it's supposed to last. And it's just, you could tell he'd made 81 films before this, because it's like a master.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. You're in good hands.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that everyone always talks about, you know, the long shots, like these, like, he's really known for these really long shots. And to be very honest, I don't know if you experienced this, I didn't notice a lot of them till I went back to do the notes. Like, they were like, I was just like subconsciously.
They're like hidden almost. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't notice them. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm pretty sure it's a good thing.
Yeah. I think
they're so fluid that you don't even notice.
Yeah.
Like, for example, when it's when they're on the journey, and it's the scene like right before, like, we've seen the dad basically make his journey, and then we cut to them. And Tamaki's like, oh, this is the same road your father took. And they're on this beach, right? And it starts with her face. And then she moves to the kids. And then they leave. And that's all one shot. And I didn't even notice it because it's moving so much.
Well, it's funny. So Spielberg's whole methodology is that he does a lot of one-ers. There's a great film essay on YouTube somewhere about the Spielberg one-er. I don't know if you've seen that. But Spielberg's whole ideology is, like, you should never feel a camera in a film. Like, you should never be aware of it. And so he does a lot of one-ers, and it pulls the video essay pulls a lot of different clips from different films, and you're like, whoa, he's done a lot of one-ers.
See?
And I never realized.
Yeah. Because
it's just like, exactly. Same thing here of, like, it just is such the right move for the scene that you don't even think about it. It's not showy at all.
Right. And the same with, like, when Tamaki's trying to escape, that's one shot. Like, she walks into frame. And then she goes to the boat, and then those guys come. It's all one shot.
Yeah.
Another one I really, really love is after Anju. So When Anju, I love the scene when Anju hears the song for the first time. When that new slave has come, she's sitting at her wheel. At first, she doesn't say anything because it's just Zushio's name. And then when she hears her name, like, you see her face change and she's like, wait a second. She stands up and like goes and talks to her. That's one long shot. And then the other one right after it, it starts close on them, but it's just one long shot of her like asking her, finding out about her mom, standing up, walking around the room, crying, just breaking down and becoming overwhelmed. It's all one shot.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
It really is.
Those few stood out to me a lot.
I love all the stuff too when they go to take Namiji up to die in the mountains. And that's a thing. Have you ever seen the Ballad of Narayama?
No.
There's two. And I think it's based on whether it's an old story or a book or I don't know. It goes way back. But there's two versions of Narayama. There's one from the 50s and there's one from the 80s, I believe. But it's all about that of like, in this small village, when people get to a certain age, I don't even think they have to be sick. You just take them up the mountain and you leave them there to die.
And what if they starve, though? Like, well, yeah,
it's probably what's going to happen. Or the
torture.
Elements. Because in this movie, they go to the trouble of protecting her from the elements by making that thatched encampment above her. But that just all that imagery, too, of like the outskirts of the estate and going into the mountains and just thinking about all those cool sets they built with like the wooden gates and fences and stuff. And then a lot of it too, you can tell is shot on a soundstage because it has that kind of soundstage magic to it. A lot of these forest sets and like the rock work behind them. But I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of adds to like the fable like quality too.
Totally.
Because if it was all locations, I think it would go again. Like if it was a torture porn kind of, wait, not torture porn. What was your
trauma porn? This movie could be torture porn.
Well, there's a difference because torture porn is like physical. Trauma porn is just like terrible things happening again and again emotionally or whatever. And yeah, I think that would have played into it more. But because it almost has a soundstage feel to it, adds to that folklore fable vibe that he's going for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like not so far removed from Miyazaki. The wilderness in this is alive. The woods are alive. Yeah. You get the sense that there's
sound of
spirits.
The
it's the sound of the birds. But also I'm talking about like an otherworldly thing.
Sure.
And the hearing the
song,
mom singing.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's great.
When they have her up there. So it's like, I love all that. It's really.
I love it too. Yeah. And the movie does like, I think the wides are really beautiful in this movie. And the wides in the wilderness, of course, too. It plays with like foreground and background. And when they're carrying the mom up the mountain, you know, that's like all one shot. And it's like this great wide. Another one that stuck out to me is, I think when they're on the beach, like they're about to get in the boats. And it's this great kind of like hidden camera.
Oh, the fisheye lens shot, right?
This ain't no Yorgos Lanthimos movie. And also when Zushio's picking up, what's her name? Namiji. And it's hidden, like the camera's just in a corner and it's one wide shot and he just comes in, picks her up and gets out. Do you remember?
No.
Oh no. Oh no. I've struck a chord.
No, I don't remember that.
It's a great shot. But I think just... the man made 81 movies. He knows how to make a movie. What else can we say?
And too, in the Academy ratio too. And the way that this movie does feel kind of expansive in that 4:3 frame.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, like so many, like Seven Samurai is 4:3. But
Can we talk about when he goes to Kyoto and like that whole sequence? It's so, I love when he like, he's sneaking in, right? And it's complete silence. And it's really good.
Is that also? No, I love that, but it's so funny the way he throws himself.
Okay, literally. Because maybe this guy would listen to you if you weren't like...
Seem crazy.
Uncontrollably sobbing and screaming. Yeah, he seems crazy. I would do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I would do the same thing. Like maybe if you took a breath and talked like a normal person.
Yes.
I would listen.
Yeah.
He really humiliates himself. I don't feel
you heard
bad
it here
for him.
First.
I don't feel bad for him in that sequence.
Yeah, well, maybe 10 years as a prisoner.
No, totally. I know. I'm being an asshole, but
having to brand people has not necessarily taught him the best manners or how to approach somebody in the real world.
But I love that, right? That sequence is great because it's like, I'm like, oh shit, like he's really, really fucked up. Like it's not like he goes to Kyoto and everything's great. And everything's
fine. No. It's, yeah, because it's. That's the difference. It's not a fairy tale, right? It's a fable, but it's not a fairy tale.
Right. And again, tying in like the whole thing, that like little statue of the goddess, it really ties everything together.
It's a nice, simple visual thing that you can just pull out.
I know. It's like, hey, my family gave your family that.
Yeah. And when you can't convince the mom that you're really her son, pull it out again.
It comes out again. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the scene like after Sancho is arrested. First of all, for being the titular character, I feel like he's really not in it that much.
No, well, it's not about him. No, he's just overlord.
It's just so interesting that like that is the title of the movie. And I get that that's the title of the book, that the short story it's based off of. But it is really a deceptive title.
What would you call this instead? Like, family is broken up and sold into slavery.
No, I would probably... A life is a torture. That's the lyric, right?
Yeah. That's a great... Everyone would see that, I'm sure, Jackie.
Life is a torture. What would it be called?
That's,
they don't have a last name.
No, I don't know. Exile. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. The beginning of this reminded me of The Witch. Wait, have you seen The Witch?
Yeah.
Right? They're being exiled and they have to go and start a new life somewhere with precarious circumstances.
Oh, man.
That's funny to me that you've seen The Witch. I feel like...
It's such a perfect Halloween movie. I love like colonial...
Wait, the Robert Eggers Witch, right?
Yes. Okay. I love like colonial American ghost stories.
Oh, me too.
I love them.
Which is like, why The Legend of Sleepy Hollow is my favorite.
See? Yeah.
I would love to see... Total rant. Tirade. But I love the book Sleepy Hollow so much and the story. And I do love the Disney version. The Tim Burton one, I know we talked about it before, is great for what it is.
Yeah.
But it's something different. It's super I would love them to go in and make just like a faithful to the book Sleepy Hollow, where like Ichabod's a school teacher and like
we have that. It's the Disney one.
I know, and I do love the Disney one. It's really great. They used to like really get me going when I was a kid.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And I love the Crucible like much.
The play.
But like the Winona Ryder one is good.
With Gary Oldman, right?
No, Scarlet Letter. Daniel
Day Lewis. It's great performances. Right.
Honestly, great performances in that movie.
I saw that in high school.
One they make you watch. Yeah. Because it's pretty faithful.
That's right.
But yeah, I love spooky like 1600s.
So you know what you like then? You like folk horror. That's what that is.
Sue me. What can I say?
Well, it just happens. It's a little early, but our film next week is a folk horror movie.
There you go.
It's not period, though. Anyway.
The only thing I was going to say is the party they throw, the really long tracking shot of Sancho's house being like, after they're freed.
Oh, yeah.
Then that rager they throw.
Yeah. Just burning everything. It's so funny, the stages of when, what's his real name? Zuccio, not to be confused with Rufio from Hook. But he comes back and Sancho doesn't recognize him at first.
Yeah, how do they not recognize him?
Well, because Sancho would never expect to see him there. And he's kind of seeing him from the side. Sure. And he has the big, you know, he's the whole like garb on and everything. And then he's like, hey, Sancho, it's been a while. And then forces Sancho to like look up at him and, oh my god. And then it's so great because he then just starts kissing his ass and it's like, bring drinks, bring this. Like, oh my
don't
god.
Don't bother. I'm not here as a friend.
Yeah, I'm not here asshole. As a friend. Fuck you. You're exiled and we're going to burn your shit down. And there's that great shot too later when like you just see Sancho's estate on fire from like the other side of the valley.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And he's like, I quit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very moving. And like, here's the thing about Zuccio, the way the actor's playing him is like not cool at all. Ever.
No.
Like he's ever cool.
That's as you can see by the scene where he's like, oh my god, wait.
But also when he comes back and he's like, you guys are free, he's like, he cannot keep his cool. He's like, get out of here quick, like you're free.
Yeah.
And like he's like, where's my sister? Like he's not cool at all.
That would have been the wrong move, yeah. For sure.
You think it would have been the wrong move if he was very like calm,
composed
in that moment.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't know.
You think
there's something about
cool?
Like Count of Monte Cristo I like, where he like shows up and he's just a badass.
I mean, I hear you, but that's a different story. You know, it's like more kind of pulpy.
I know. This is more realistic.
Yeah.
Like, he would be freaking out. He would be heartbroken. Like,
he's not developed the skills to deal with this. Like, he doesn't know how to act.
Right. He also definitely should not be given a governorship, because what the hell does he know about governing?
I like, too, they give it to him, and then he brings up, like, oh, I'm going to abolish slavery, and they're like, whoa.
No, you're not.
And they're like, you're not going to, and also, if you think you are, you need to reconsider this position.
Yeah, are you even capable of being the governor? I'm like, no, he's not.
I'm like, clearly he's not. Maybe someone needs to sit down with him and brief him, maybe? Like, they didn't think to brief him on, like, how to be a governor.
Literally. It's so funny. I also clocked that. I'm like, yeah, maybe you guys should help him. He's been a slave.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we do sight and sound?
Let's do sight and sound. What's your favorite sight?
Okay, it's really, really hard. But, you know, I think it's got to be just Anju's sacrifice. Like, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing just floored me.
From the gate
starting
to her walking
and
the old woman on her knees.
Ripples. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. It's just beautiful, gorgeous. Ethereal, everything.
That or the moment, honestly, where she realizes that, like, that's her mom's song. That's cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What about you?
Nice. My sight is the moment when Namiji, they've laid her next to a tomb, like a headstone or something.
Yeah, there's like bones on the ground.
Yeah, and it's that shot where it's there's a tree in the foreground and there's water dripping from the tree. Of course, there's a water element.
It's amazing.
And then Zoshio comes and it's all in that wide
picks
and picks her up. But it's just like you hold on it for a while and the dripping of the water from the tree and
it's
everything.
Amazing.
It's like, oh, yes, just put me into this image.
Yeah, it's really good.
But also don't.
Yeah, it's really hard times.
What about favorite sound?
So, speaking of this kind of like folky and like creepy, ghosty stuff, I think it is when they are traveling and the priestess, quote, quote, priestess, fucking bitch.
That's what she should have been in the credits as.
Bitch.
In parentheses. Yeah.
She's come, right? And she's trying to convince them to go to her house. And then their servant comes back because she went to go find porridge. When the servant comes back, the lowest of low drums start.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, I had a bad feeling about the woman. The drum started and I was like, oh, like it's going to be bad. But then they go to her house and I was like, maybe not. But those drums... That's my favorite sound, because it was like it was so creepy and out of nowhere. Like, there was no score before that, like, not really nothing substantial, like, in that moment.
Yeah.
And then when the servant comes back and the drums start, I'm like, ooh, trouble. Here it is.
That's so funny for you to pick like an ominous foreboding thing.
Who do you think I am? I'm not all sunshine and
you're
daisies.
Like, I love the moment where Clark Gable kisses his love.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Or no, when they kiss.
No, no, not even that movie. I'm just
Clark
kidding.
Gable,
I'm kidding. I'm jesting.
Which
with
love?
You. I'm giving you a hard time.
I do love those, though.
We're just going against type, because I usually pick the more fucked up things, and then you pick like the sweeter or no, not necessarily sweeter, but no,
mushy, gushy,
no,
lovey.
Sometimes with this, sometimes no. I feel like actually, often you pick the like. The really melancholic moments and well, anyway,
just moments with a lot of feeling.
Yeah.
And what do you pick?
Those two.
Well, what's your pick today?
My pick, you said it, it's when the first servant girl or slave woman first sings the song, and they're together in that thatched little house,
good.
And she starts singing it, and you know, again, the servant is singing it just as if she's just singing
she's
a song
working,
while
yeah.
she's working. But obviously it holds such a deeper meaning. So here it is.
Love like big family epics like this of like years and journeys and like trying to reunite. And I love stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
And I love that that song is like really the driving engine. It's really cool.
It's the thing that gives them hope. If it wasn't for the song, right?
They wouldn't know anything about their mom being alive or where. Or...
Yeah, they've both submitted to this lifestyle being slaves. Like yeah. They're not, especially him. She still kind of brings it up. Although, does she not? I feel like maybe she only brings up escaping after she hears the other woman sing this song, right?
She does, yeah. Because okay, she's yeah. like, listen, our mom's alive. Like, we should go.
Right. So it's the song that gives them hope.
Right. And so Taro's yeah. the one that told them, like, just get older and then escape, like, dip. And they're like, okay, cool. Easy.
Yeah. In this case, you know, in Zushio's case, you know, it's just get on the good side of Sancho and be trustworthy and do your shit and brand people. And then once you have enough goodwill with him, then he'll let you kind of off the leash a little bit and you can just run away while carrying a sick, dying woman.
So unnecessary. So unnecessary.
Hey, that's the spinoff I want to see. I want to see her life after this.
Oh.
Because she's at the temple, right? So it's like.
So what's she going to do?
She's going to take up horticulture.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Also, like, such Sound of Music, Salzburg nuns, hiding people vibes.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. Well, this is normally where we would do Pauline.
No!
But this being 1954, there's no Pauline Kael review for this. See, I could not find Pauline Kael. I'm only assuming she didn't review it. I don't know what its release was like in the U.S.
I couldn't find any information. Like, the information on this movie was very sparse.
Yeah, interesting.
I know.
So no Pauline, but... We do have all the wonder people. We do have all the wonderful people at Letterboxd to hear from.
Great.
Okay. I have a 4.5-star review that says, there are classics that are only great for their token values. And there are also classics that can actually stand the test of time and still reduce you to tears decades later. Sancho the Bailiff, one of the most transcendental cinema achievements ever from Japan, is both technically perfect and emotionally devastating. It's both a triumphant celebration of a family's generational efforts to rid slavery of feudal Japan and a heart-wrenching account of that family brutally torn apart in the cruel torrent of history. And the highly underrated Kenji Mizoguchi found the magical balance between the two.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so here's a 1.5-star. A glacially paced, beautifully shot, morally simplistic, and philosophically underdeveloped tale. Sancho the Bailiff failed to engage me on any level whatsoever.
What?
The biggest failing for me was certainly in the character and story department. You just never get an emotional bearing on the people or story we are watching. Characters just react to things that happen for most of the film, with only the beginning and ending having characters tangibly demonstrate their worldviews or core beliefs.
Bringing it back to Seinfeld.
Yeah. On paper, the story sounds pretty great, but as is, I just never got a sense of the significance or severity of Zushio's moral lapse, nor Anju's resolve.
Okay, bro, we get it.
That's just not... See, it's hard to find reviews. It was hard for me to pull Letterboxd reviews because either people love it or... It's not valid. Like, you can't really say anything bad about this movie.
That's really not valid.
I don't think you can.
It's like this 1-star review I have that says, Japanese master Kenji Mizoguchi should sleep with one eye open for the rest of his life. Well, he actually died in 56. Sandshit the Flop was designed... was designed from the ground up to appeal towards art house masochists. This film felt more like a bad superhero movie than anything close to cinema. What? It is a stellar achievement in throwing feces at a screen and calling it art. What? I highly recommend watching this on a phone so you can throw it off the top of a skyscraper along with yourself.
Okay.
It's clearly a troll. It's
Is it a troll?
Yeah, it's a troll.
Whoever wrote that, I hope his or her loved ones are checking on them.
Yeah, it's a troll.
I don't know. 5 stars. This is a god dream. That's it.
Hey.
These are the reviews I like.
I got a kick out of the low ratings. 1 star. This one is not for me. I wasn't invested 30 minutes in. And when I went to the iconic scenes, I was not impressed. I guess my assumption was a samurai movie, and it's more like a samurai court drama. It's neither of those things.
The bailiff is back.
It's neither of those things. I wasn't expecting for the focus to be on the family rather than the old governor. Even when I jumped to scenes that are lauded for their beauty, I was unmoved. There is obvious talent to the camera work, but it means nothing if the story is lacking. Perhaps I am just not in the right mindset to appreciate this film. Well, hey, at least they acknowledge it at the end there. I don't think you were in the right mindset, because it is not a samurai court drama, as you say. There's literally no samurai in this movie or a court.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I got another review. Someone gave it 4 stars, but all they're doing is listing everything they don't like about it. Why is it called Sancho the Bailiff when the story clearly isn't about Sancho? Sure, a considerable chunk of the narrative has to do with issues, slavery, exploitation, related to the estate Sancho oversees. But the Sancho character himself is barely a peripheral character.
Just
seems peculiar to title the movie after him.
His shadow is cast over the entire film.
And then he goes, this is no bearing on how I feel about the movie whatsoever. I just wanted to mention it.
I don't know.
A 4-star review.
I defend the title. I think like it's like the same way of naming a film after the villain. I don't know, or like the main oppressive cause. Like,
sure.
Even if he doesn't have that much screen time, the shadow of his house is the entire film.
Everything,
it's everything. This is the last one I have, but sure. I couldn't help myself.
Oh my gosh.
1 star.
I love this. We're only reading bad ones.
Snooze fest with no payout in the end.
There's so much payout. Like, literally everything comes full circle. The song, the idol, like, what? There are literal, tangible payouts.
Also, emotional payouts. You get the emotional payout at the end with the mom. I mean, how do you not tear up during that scene?
I know.
Give me
a
break. Yeah.
But you never cry.
As I get older, I'm starting to more and more. It's something about, I don't know.
That's true. It
happens. I can see my own death in the mirror or something. Wow. Here we go again.
Here we go again. Dad.
Wild strawberries, yeah. Well, this was Sancho Dayo, Sancho the Bailiff.
Our so fun.
Jackie's first Mizoguchi and the first Mizoguchi we've done on the podcast so far.
I believe there's more.
Yeah, I think so. Next week is a s'mores episode, but we think that you should all join because I have succeeded in bamboozling Jackie into watching Midsommar.
To be fair, I was going to watch it.
Oh, shit. So I should have picked something gnarlier.
It was Hereditary that I didn't want to watch. And I fooled you all, and you all voted.
So here's what happened. The poll on Patreon was split. It was 50-50.
And I've been wanting to watch Midsommar, so I'm like, fuck it, I'm watching Midsommar.
We flipped a coin, and Midsommar magically won, so we're doing Midsommar.
Oh, that's what you want to tell people?
Yeah, that's how I did it. You just decided, you're like, oh, I'm only going to do Midsommar. You're like very relieved that Hereditary didn't win. You should still see it. But yeah, Midsommar, the Ari Aster modern masterpiece. Is that too bold to say? I think so.
I'm so glad you like it so much. You never like modern movies.
This is something. So I'm excited for you to see this. So come back next week for our s'mores episode on Ari Aster's Midsommar and hear all of Jackie's thoughts, even though she's probably already read the Wikipedia plot synopsis.
I have because I wanted to see it, but I thought it would be too scary.
Oh, when it came out?
Yeah.
So come back for then. Until then, I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye. Can't wait to talk about this bear suit.
Special thanks to the patrons at our highest tier, John Pennington and Cynthia Fordwell. Seen and Heard is an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line, you can find us on email at hello@seenandheardpod.com or on Instagram @seenandheardpod.